on 1116 SEN. We're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart, and he had very experienced players against two very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic, but at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555.
Good morning, football fans. It's overcast, still, and very Melbourne-like on a Sunday morning in a town that has the lot. Boy, I've seen cyclists out this morning, runners, joggers, breakfasters, and of course, plenty of football fans, of which we count you in that number. You can do it all in Melbourne, and you can do it all, and you should do it all, when you listen, by listening to SEN for your football fix. And we've got one this morning for you. Inside Football every Sunday morning with Robert Shaw. You name it, he's done it and still doing it in the world of football, including, hopefully, in the weeks to come, taking Brighton Grammar places where they hadn't been for a century, I think. A couple of premierships in 5 years is unthinkable, but it's just about to happen, maybe. And myself, Mark Fine, to bring you everything that happens on the field during the siren-to-siren action that is AFL football. Good morning to you, Robert Shaw.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, listeners, on this, a little bit overcast, but it'll be a good day. Good day for footy today.
Nice day for football, nice day for Carlton, and maybe John Barker's Carlton to further their cause, both as players on the field, as a coach off the field, but more importantly, as a club that was really copping it in the neck and beleaguered and has shown over the last 3 weeks that they are made a much better stuff. But we like looking forward rather than back, don't we?
Well, we do, and I'll just say that it's probably for Monday night. We'll discuss it with Brownie. Are you in the driver's seat as the standing coach?
History says no.
History says no, does it? Yeah, I haven't got the history in front of me, but he's doing a fine job, and you're right. So we'll have a chat about that tomorrow night, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, there have been some standing coaches, caretaker coaches, that have gone on to get the main job. Paul Roos is probably the most famous. Do we count? We're going to talk a lot about the Bulldogs today. Do we count Footscray's Peter Rode in his one-game audition, that game that Footscray beat Collingwood in, when Terry Wallace jumped ship, supposedly for the Sydney Swans? It all happened at the same time, of course, this. Do we count that as a successful audition? And then on the other side, probably the most striking failure to convince was it Paul Feltham up at Brisbane?
Yeah, despite 5 out of 7.
Yeah, 5 out of 7. The beleaguered Bears had found their most successful coach and dispensed with him in the same 2 month period.
Anyway.
And Jade Rawlings is another one who, interestingly, Jade, when he was caretaker coach of the Tigers, he didn't do his senior coaching aspirations much good, but he entrenched himself as a must-have part of a coaching panel. So he obviously, did the team thing, took the bullet for the Tigers. They would go on and appoint another. I think maybe, was that when Terry got the job? May well have been when Plough got the job. I think so. But anyhow, the fact remains that we have got games to talk about. Last night, do we feel sorry for anybody that went to Etihad Stadium or decided to cancel dinner arrangements, told the Dahl, look, you know what, I think we might stay home, because last time these two teams met, it was an electric, high-scoring, and just a brilliant game of footy. I want to see goals in action. Do you apologise for a completely different game? Though, as the word used in the Herald Sun today, and I couldn't agree more, absorb him nevertheless. Do we apologise or not?
That. I changed about 8 times, Mark. I had a big day yesterday. VFL, Richmond versus Willie, across the MCG for the Essendon game. Came back, wanted to watch Brisbane, and they were 5 goals up when I got home, and I saw them lose. And, of course, the intriguing, absorbing, or as some might even suggest on social media, a disappointing game in the fact that you saw two very good young coaches coaching two incredibly exciting and positive teams. Did they overcoach? Did they turn the game into, well, it was three goals all, so they obviously turned it into a defensive arm wrestle. I was hoping, like most of the independents, Mark, to see an enthralling end-to-end pace run, Bontempelli, Jack Stephen, Armitage, Riewoldt get going. But then I thought about it, and I thought, you know, this is the modern game. This is the modern defensive game, teaching young players about structures and organisation and defensive parameters and all that sort of thing. And the debate kept coming through my head. Gee, you know, Dalhous getting tagged out of the game by Geary did a great job. As I said, Bontempelli couldn't get free. It was, and then it became, as most people thought, pretty absorbing to watch it. And you're thinking, well, does the coach that breaks the mould in this game and gets his team to run and breaks the shackles going to win the game? But as you saw, it went right down to the last 30 seconds of the game anyway. So I found it, I was riveted by the game, and that's how I saw it, Mark, and we'll go through it in greater detail shortly.
These two teams are stepping in time once again. History, football history, has St Kilda and the Bulldogs, whether Footscray or the Western Bulldogs, colliding like comets, virtually, on a number of occasions in their history. When St Kilda had not played finals football for since 1939 and re-entered the fray in the 60s, the rebuild towards their only flag, after 22 years away from finals, who did they meet on their first return to finals football but Footscray, who beat them, a Footscray led by Ted Whitten, beat them by 9 points. When St Kilda again were out of the finals for 20 years, and with Tony Lockett playing, had a short period where they had a sniff in 91 and 92, who ended that short run at glory for Tony Lockett's Saints, but the Bulldogs in 1992. Then in 1997, of course, when St Kilda did make the grand final, Bulldogs, Footscray thought they had made the grand final with that Liberatore goal, and we looked like we were going to have this almost destiny-created Footscray-St Kilda grand final. That didn't happen. Of course, St Kilda lost.
And the ex-Footscray player, Shane Allen.
And then in 97, that's right, the ex-dog dogged the Saints. And then, of course, as St Kilda, a few years ago in the late 2000s, 9 and 10, made a grand final. It was, again, the Bulldogs in the preliminary final, this time not the victors, but the vanquished. So they've split the honours almost evenly. They've played a lot of finals football together, and it looks as though, as they step in time, the general thinking before the game is that the Bulldogs are 2 years ahead of the Saints. It might not be like that. Of course, both clubs' supporters will be saying, you know what, we've got a very senior captain playing possibly the best football of their careers. The Bulldogs will point to Robert Murphy. St Kilda will point to Nick Riewoldt. And both of those players, I would say this is Nick Riewoldt in the last 2 years, at the moment, is the best he's ever been. He's running and kicking and marking. There is not an element of his game that's not on song this year. Of course, he was injured, got KO'd, but it's only taken three or four. And Robert Murphy has never, no one has ever disposed of the ball by foot like Robert Murphy. No one has. So both sets of supporters will be saying, how do we replace them? But then might be thinking, we don't have to think about replacing them yet. They're not going anywhere in the immediate. It's a really interesting pair of football clubs who, by the way, have won one premiership each and have supporters that through those, for one team great, the other team painful finals, have always acknowledged the pain of the other's journey. So it would be very special if once again the Saints and the Dogs went up the ladder together, and I could think of nothing better than a St Kilda Doggies grand final. And if I lost as a St Kilda supporter, I'd know that my son and my best mate Gilbo had a win, And if we won, then I'm sure get some consolation from those two people. Interesting, eh?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I found it fantastic to watch them. And are we going to do that game first?
Yeah, we'll do that game first. You saw Essendon Hawthorn. Now, we contend ourselves with matters on the field. What did you make of the Sam Mitchell stuff?
Unnecessary. Disappointing for a leader.
Not a fan of charades?
Yeah.
Two words, first word. Drug, no. Second word, cheese.
And I was at the game and I didn't, obviously, I'm sitting up the back there and I didn't notice it. So I saw all the replays when I got, I just thought unnecessary, provocative.
I thought it was good for one reason.
Reactionary.
Really good. You're looking at me like, how could that have been good? Because whether you, I don't know what your stance is on James Hurd, and we've hopefully got the audio to play for you. Spider, I'm sure we've got that audio of James Hurd's press conference response to Sam Mitchell. We're getting that now. And whatever you think of James Hurd, and he has got his knockers and he has got his lifelong fans through this polarising couple of years. But his response during the press conference was, I think, fantastic. It would be easy to, I think every Essendon supporter would have been enraged and it would have been easy to fly off the handle. Let's have a listen, if you haven't heard, to how James Hurd handled what was, and Sam Mitchell will admit this, a regrettable situation.
I think if he's apologised for it, then, you know, we'll let it go. But if it's something that's still out there, I think it's naive and idiotic, really, for someone to do that. If he has done it, but if he's apologised, then I think we let it go. It's disappointing for our playing group that that's still happening.
And you can't be fairer than that. He would go on to say that through a period of, you know, media, there was a word that he used. But
propaganda,
that's right, that's the word. Through a period of media propaganda, that's what people are thinking and doing. But given that he would have had a short period before the press conference to formulate his reaction, he could have easily got stuck into Sam Mitchell. It would have been fair, but he said it was regrettable. But if he's apologised, we'll move on. I don't think you could handle it in a more state.
Well, that's the difference. He probably has half an hour, Mark. Probably has half an hour.
Okay. Yeah, I'm saying, but that, you know.
But it's after Sam Mitchell reacted in a second. No excuse at all.
I think he said both ways, though. He said it regrettable, and he made it very clear that it's regrettable. But if he's apologised, we move on. And well done. I think that's sort of the wisdom of Solomon, not Dean, the old king. Were you happy with how it was handled by James? I thought it was very good.
Yeah, I didn't like the, propaganda, you know, raised my eyebrows about that. You know, Sam Mitchell did it because of the exposure and all that sort of thing.
Well, that's his take on it. But the response
but
to
the
Sam,
response was,
to Hawthorn, you know.
He didn't know what Sam Mitchell had said at the time. So he was very good in saying that, well, if he has apologised, I watched the David King interview on Fox. They did it in the whole of it. He actually didn't say, I'm really, really sorry. He said it in a roundabout way. He said, it's a really bad look. You know, I had my time again.
Yeah,
I'll probably
think
a little bit.
That's an apology.
That's an apology.
Yeah.
Even though you don't say sorry. Yeah, he certainly said, it's regrettable. I've got my kids here, which is good. That I really didn't want my kids to see that. So he went into it in great depth, Sam Mitchell, and I thought Hurd handled it very, very well.
Yeah.
If he has done it, then we've got to get on with it and move on with it.
And the whole press conference is worth listening to. We can't obviously play that, but James Hurd talks about growing up in the 80s where the Hawthorn-Essendon rivalry was enormous, crying when Essendon lost the 83 premiership at Grand Final. Was it 83?
83, they lost.
Was the one that he cried. Yeah. And how much respect he has, how hugely respectful he is of Hawthorn today and what they've achieved, but that there's a great rivalry between the two teams. And in explaining that, he, even though made no reference to Sam Mitchell during that period of questioning, was putting in to some context the whole afternoon. And it was just a really well-handled press conference. giving the perspective of where he is, where the club is, but also where that game sits. And was the whole press conference was good. He had a very light-hearted moment with one young cadet journalist who asked a question that was, you know, really the sort of thing that James wanted to talk about, which was young players in the team, good fluff, and rather than, you know, give him a searingly hot look like Mick Malthouse used to during losses, he had a great bit of fun with him. It's worth listening to the whole press conference to get a sense of a statesman-like performance by a losing coach. Again, take James Hurd out of the equation if your bias is so great against him that he can do no right. And also, if your bias is so strong for him that he can do no wrong, just listen to how a coach behaved after an important loss. Really well done. Let's take a break. Come back. The Bulldogs and the Saints, this will be right up your alley. This is in your wheelhouse, Shorey, because this was all about coaching, all about setup, all about sticking to game plans. Didn't have the individual flair that we might like in some games of football, though some individuals stood out. So when we come back, how the Doggies beat the Saints.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football, St Kilda.
When the Saints go marching in. Oh, when the Saints go marching in.
The Western Bulldogs.
Sons of the West.
Stevens is there on this now and found.
They're out on
Bob
this side.
Murphy. They've got him out wide, you're right. Now they're coming out to Eastern Wood. He's got to go back inboard. He handballs it. Pickin! Murphy! Pickin! Pickin! Kicks for 50!
To know that you were challenged all night and it really wasn't going that well for us, and to win in a game that was really different, you know, there wasn't a lot of stoppages and there's a lot of turnovers, and I just thought our defenders were incredible. You know, they intercepted, they cut them off, and the amount of entries that they had, you know, they probably should have scored more goals, but on open plays, our defenders just really held it together. So that'll definitely hold our backmen in good stead.
Yes, 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 and Luke Beveridge, all correct. And it would not have been lost on St Kilda fans watching the game last night with some of those split screenshots of both coaches deeply immersed in that game, that in fact at the start of the pre-season, both men were part of the St Kilda coaching setup. Of course, Luke Beveridge was packing his bags for Seaford when the call came from the Western Bulldogs, and to Footscray he headed, and what a great decision that is looking like being for the Western Bulldogs. It's bearing fruit on a weekly basis. So last night, in a very different game, as Luke Beveridge described it, which it certainly was from the first time these two sides met, it was the Doggies who came out on top, of course. Bulldogs, 9-8-62. St Kilda, 7-14-56. For the Doggies, Eastern Wood, unbelievable. And 26,511 at Etihad Stadium would be under no illusions that these two teams are similar, heading up the ladder, did it differently, but showed that they can work a game plan, stick to very, very much, though defensive, but rigorous pre-match planning. And for that, I think both sets of fans would be appreciative. Maybe the impartials didn't get what they got, but I think both clubs got something out of that game. And more importantly for the Doggies, on this steep learning curve that is 2015, they got the 4 points, and they are in the top eight, and they are a real life chance to do what nobody thought and play finals this year.
Well, they're a real chance. Mark, just off the SMS, please. Look, I know 24 minutes past 10 and no mention of the Tigers.
Just to explain the show.
Yeah, just...
I'll explain the program. I'll explain how it works.
Just one more time.
We look back at the games on Saturday. Now, because this has been a split round, we will be looking at Richmond's great win over the Swans in the next hour. But let's be honest, whoever set that in is certainly a Richmond supporter and probably wanting to hear again what he's already heard yesterday. I'm sure that that very proud Richmond supporter has consumed every paper, listened to SEN, watched the replays, and he wants to hear it again and again, how good the Tigers were. We like giving you the fresh news on games that are yet to be chewed over and overanalysed, and we try to do that on a Sunday morning with the Saturday games, but we certainly will be looking at Tigers and Swans in the second hour.
Thanks, Mark. Sorry about that. Now, as I said, I looked at this game. Look, I don't like shootouts. I didn't want a 24-23 game. You've got to remember, last time they played, Mark, there was the big comeback by St Kilda, 55 points down, but the scores were only 14 goals to 13. So that's a reasonably tight game to back up. 9 goals to 7 this game, 3 goals each at halftime. And listening to the coaches, both coaches pretty honest, I reckon, in their assessment. Not a lot of stoppages, but because both teams chose to really have a really sophisticated defensive organisation. The Western Bulldogs, one of the most improved players, and he's been maligned over his career, plays a pivotal role in this, and that is Jaron Grant off a wing, where he offers great protection for and numbers for their back line. I thought he was excellent,
and that's
disciplined.
Doesn't that speak volumes of the coach? To be able to get something out of a Jaron Grant when the football world would have assumed that there was not a lot to be got.
And he now plays a pivotal role on the wing. He's 6'4", so he's a funny size. He's got great pace, running ability, but what Beveridge has got him to do is, look, get down there and be the 7th or the 8th defender. Help us out a lot of it. Interestingly, Fletcher Roberts spent a lot of time on Nick Riewoldt, which is a great learning curve, and you sometimes think, well, hang on, get Morris onto him, get the experienced blokes onto him. But what that did, Mark, if Fletcher Roberts could hang in there, it actually freed up Morris. And this game, you can analyse this till the cows come home. This game was purely won by two areas. St Kilda's inability with their last kick and the Western Bulldogs' ability to intercept the last kick. They took 21 marks from St Kilda's. And it came down to this, Mark. It came down to that. Both sides terrifically even. And I just thought that, and you've spoken about him, Wood. This was won by Wood, Boyd, Murphy and Morris. Just that experienced core. Yes, there was a fair amount of pressure in the midfield that put pressure on the St Kilda kicks. A lot of them were self-inflicted. We go through stats again, which shows you that the losing team won basically in every area of the game. Every possible component of the game that you want to put on a stat sheet, except for the last one. The precise kick inside forward line. Now, you had Bruce kicking 3, didn't have a bad game. You had the awesome performance of Riewoldt. Membry didn't get on the scoreboard, played as a lead-up. And the other
Can
two,
I talk about Membry for a moment?
He's an interesting player. They're trying to... I'll just, you know, he's an interesting player because you prefer to have Riewoldt and Bruce reasonably deep with Riewoldt a licence. He plays a bloody important role, Mark, if he's going to be the lead-up, hit-up centre-half forward. Essendon trying it with Ambrose. So would Membry be 6'2" only, Mark, in the old...
I reckon he's a big 6'2". You know,
So what's his role tactically for the team?
He's the hit-up forward.
Right.
It's a position that Hickey played for a couple of weeks, but he's a ruckman. So 1 week it worked with Tom
Hickey.
He's
a ruckman?
Tom Hickey.
Oh, yeah, gotcha.
So for a week, they tried it. They used McCartan there against Carlton when Riewoldt wasn't playing. They took McCartan off at half-time against Carlton, even though... He's too young and he wasn't playing well, but they lost their structure without the hit-up forward. So they then, and probably realised that in the post-match analysis, they then went to Hickey, who worked first up, but I'm just seeing something on TV that happened last night at the game, by the way, on replay, and let me just cut in. Have you seen anything freakier than that mid-air kick by Jack Stevens?
That it curled around
that
the boundary line.
Bent around the boundary line and was a chest mark to a St Kilda player. That was freaky in the extreme. Anyhow, so they tried Hickey, worked for a week, but it's not going to work. And especially with Bruce and Riewoldt now starting to have a good relationship working out where to go, Hickey's not a lead-up forward. At best, he's a fold-back ruckman taking a ruck deep in the forward line. So that Membry's the right man at the moment for that position. It may be McCartan in the not too distant future. But Membry last night, I think Tim Membry, on face value, had his best. You've got to remember, Tim Membry's only played 9 games of league football. Played 1 for Sydney, and then this is his 9th game of league footy. He's a very young player in terms of football life. And last night, he had 17 touches. His previous best had been 12 in a game of footy. 8 contested in a very tight contested game. 4 or 5 marks, either hard on the lead or contested. It was his best game of football, and he certainly showed something last night, Tim Membry, no doubt about it. But for St Kilda to win that game, given the defensive setups, they needed their hit up forward to be a beat quicker in his thinking and his ball movement. Mark, the quick handball, could have broken the line. And if you watch the replay on a few occasions, even though he worked very hard to get the ball, he didn't have that instinctive notion, and I'm sure he's got the ability to, but he didn't think like somebody who was playing in a game that needed those lines to be broken. And as the hit up forward, that's the man who breaks the lines. You can turn over, which happened during the game, hit up forward, half forward flanking, just outside 50, get ball, quick handball onto somebody.
So you're saying
quick turn around and kick.
Slows them down a bit.
Quickly turn around and kick, top of the goal square.
Okay.
That is the sort of play that gets goals in those games. And St Kilda had the right man in Membry out on the lead, but just in wheeling around, in not letting off that handball really quickly, he's got some learning to do. But hey, it's his 9th game, and I'm pretty sure that's not hard to teach. I'm not talking about pace. I'm not talking about speed. I'm just talking about maybe thought process. And hopefully the post-game analysis will bear that out on a couple of occasions.
Oh, it's interesting that we see that. So just a small issue, and I thought when it happened, I thought, well, the way that both these teams are going, was it the wrong move? Now, the Saints had the choice, Schneider, Sinclair. So to me, where they're heading, so it must have been a short term how to help win the game, because where they're heading, it appeared to me that they want depth, they want experience, rather than playing the future. A lot of St Kilda people have been very happy with Sinclair and were a little bit disappointed that he wasn't in side.
No, they shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be?
That'll open up in the second half of the season.
Right.
Somebody else will go on the long term. Yeah, these things open up again, I'm pretty sure. Are you allowed to engage a rookie after the second half of the year?
I don't know the rules. Sorry, Mark. I don't. You're allowed to update a rookie after round 11 without an injury.
One rookie.
Yeah.
But then if somebody gets injured,
you must be able to do it again, because obviously that's the reason it's there.
I'm assuming you can. But nevertheless, St Kilda have found a balance, and it's important that all developing teams do this. The Bulldogs have definitely got this balance. This is something that you saw Gold Coast, even though they're a very young team, when in the heart of the season they lost some of their experienced players, things can fall apart very quickly. And I think in his second year, Alan Richardson has really struck a formula, a balance between players in their first couple of seasons, say in their first 3 years, and those players you describe as experienced. Now, Schneider is part of, obviously, of the smaller group, which are the experienced players. And that balance, when it's not there, and he made a point, he was very upset that he couldn't, that he attacked the rookie system, as did the AFLPA, but he said the choice was difficult to make. But he said what Schneider brings for us is another of our on-field leaders. He's like having a captain on the field. And for these young players learning their way in the game, they almost need a spiritual guide. If not one for one, then certainly Schneider fills that role with the small forwards, Nick Riewoldt with the tall forwards, Sam Fisher with the tall backs. You would imagine Jared Ngeary with the smaller backs. And through the middle, of course, Lee Montagna has his captaincy role. And I think that balance is something that he is very keen to preserve, Alan Richardson. And to that end, Schneider in the wash-up is, because of the limited number of those senior players, a rarer species than Jack Sinclair, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Okay. In such an absorbing game, I found it very absorbing. Just off the SMS, it's probably gone now. What's it say, Mark? No, don't worry about it. It's gone.
Yep.
I said, why are you talking about
No, don't worry.
Anyway, don't worry about it. I find that very disappointing. I thought this was a great game compared to the other game that I saw. Mark, a couple of the individual duels I found fascinating. Obviously, one of the key ones. In a game that was so tight, you had all these little pockets of
I'd love to know what you made of those contests.
Yeah. Well, Dalhousie and Geary was a ripper. That was a side act. I don't know whether the Western Bulldogs used him on the ball enough. They did. He pushes onto the ball, but they have really developed Luke Dalhousie. There he is. We're watching the replay. He went in there a little bit. But that duel was really, really good. The Western Bulldogs brought on Lucas Webb for Will Minson. He kicked a very critical goal.
The two subs almost won them the game, but Webb did.
Well, and Ross has played his best quarter and has shown St Kilda people, well, you know, I might be in this team for a while, because that was his best performance with 11 in the last quarter, which, given the nature of the game, was absolutely critical.
But didn't Webb kick, you know, under immense pressure, kick an excellent set shot goal? Very well done to Lucas Webb.
No, he's a class act, there's no doubt about that. Interesting, he's had a big year. He started most of the games or been on the bench. I'm not sure whether that was the first time he's he's been on the substitute bench, but he certainly came on, and that was a much-needed steadier. There's no doubt about that. We've spoken about Murphy. We've spoken about All-Australian halfback flank in Wood.
Wood's something special.
He is something special. And
He just saved
the mark. Because of the weighted numbers, the advantage, the statistical advantage that St Kilda had, that back line is really galvanising based on, like, he's prepared to play Hamlin, he's prepared to play Fletcher Roberts, he's got the live wire Johannesson, right, that is electrically worrying, you know, because he does have some goals kicked on him, but he's got to roll him at that time.
Johannesson was huge last night.
Yeah.
I would go as far as saying that he was the difference between the two teams. That they were so similar, these two sides. Easton Wood intercept mark was brilliant. A lot of people are going to get stuck into Sam Gilbert for a couple of disposal errors. Sam Gilbert was excellent last night when he made that kick that he kicked across goal that fell short and was an easy goal to the Bulldogs in the third quarter. First of all, he was put in a situation where his teammates were corralled and he took the game on. His kicking let him down there, not anything else. What he did was absolutely the right thing, but he just was a terrible kick.
Yeah, and he also took
He followed that up
taking
2 minutes
on the
later. 2 minutes later, yeah. Did you see the spoil he did? The punch?
No, people don't notice that, Mark.
The precision, perfect spoil, and then right at the end of the third quarter, the Bulldogs could have scored one 10 seconds from the siren, if not for a desperate tackle by Gilbert. He was the one providing run out of the back line in the last quarter, and
because
he's only had a couple of games back.
Bias against him, and he has done it. There's no doubt about that. But you're right. No one texts in or puts on social media, what a sensational spoil. Absolutely magnificent. They don't say that. They look at the errors. Even the error he made where he got caught holding the ball, he's trying to take the game on. He's trying to attack the game. He's trying to win the game. He got round one, and then Stringer nailed him with a perfect rundown tackle. So,
and that's why Johannesson, I think, was the difference between the two teams, because their running
backline
is better.
Yeah.
Is better. Last night, Johannesson was better. So for St Kilda's run out of the back line to be Gilbert, he took the game on, and he shouldn't be pilloried for a couple of errors because it was that sort of game. But it should be noted that Johannesson did that job much better.
And I just came down to the Bulldogs' back line. Like, St Kilda just denied it. I was really concerned. I thought, you know, this game's going to break open because the Bulldogs, to me, had the, as you just said, they appeared to have the serious dash and the pace and the run that could break the game open. So the defensive organisation of the Saints was absolutely first class. And under the pump, it was reactionary from Beveridge, who had to put numbers back. we're getting thrashed territorially. We've got to get numbers back. That's why I said that Grant played an important game. He allowed Fletcher Roberts played an important game. You're saying, hang on, he's playing on Nick Riewoldt for considerable periods of time. He got them pulled down. But what you got to understand, if a young kid can hang in on a champion, right, it means that Wood didn't have to go to Riewoldt. It means that Morris didn't have to go to Riewoldt, you know. And it was good coaching. Good coaching from both groups and a lot to like about them going forward. I'm not sure who they got next week, Mark. It'll be...
The Bulldogs. The Bulldogs have got Carlton coming up, I think. They've got Carlton and the Gold
next
Coast.
Next Thursday, Western Bulldogs versus Carlton at Etihad.
And then the Gold Coast. So they the really Saints should win got, the next two games.
The Saints will fancy themselves against the Bombers at Etihad, I would imagine.
Very interesting clash, that one.
All right.
Let's go to a call. And you can call them 29-429-1116. First up, Steve in Altona. Hello, Steve.
Oh, hi, guys. Enjoying the discussion. I'm a Bulldog supporter. I was there with friends at the game, and the first thing we commented on in the first half was just how good St Kilda were. Whenever we had the ball, we had no space, and whenever we were looking forward, we had no space. And we thought they were fantastic, actually, St Kilda. And I actually think AFL's a better game. If every game was a high-scoring shootout, I think that would diminish AFL. We liked the fact that it was a fantastic, absorbing, tough game. And probably, as you guys have said, the difference was really when we got our run on, we put goals on the board. When the Saints had their turn, they couldn't.
Can I ask you a question, Steve?
Yep.
What do you reckon in the... And I'm just interested in the answer. No, nothing pointed here or loaded. What do you think is a high-scoring shootout in 2015?
Well, that's a good point, actually.
Can I ask how old you are?
Yeah, I'm early 50s.
I thought you'd be similar vintage. I think when we grew up, a high-scoring shootout was St Kilda versus Melbourne at the MCG, 31 goals to 21 or something. There were high-scoring shootouts now that we will in our childhood that we will never, ever see again.
But I reckon it's a different nature now. I think people who say the game's not as good, I reckon when teams get run-ons and the fast movement and precision, I think that's just as exciting. It mightn't lead to 30 goals always, but I guess a fast-running, fluid game is maybe a better way, I should say, about last night rather than high-scoring necessarily, because we really enjoyed it. It was such a tough... And the Saints were just so disciplined and tough. It was just fantastic to watch. We're very relieved to get the win, of course. And I want to give you some quick kudos, if that's all right.
Sure. Why not? I got the other.
Last year, you were going on. I was waving a bit about Williams and about Higgins and about Cooney, about Gia, you know, moving on some of these old guys. And what you said, it was kind of forced on us last year, but it's most of the reason we've improved this year, the fact that some of these young guys are getting a chance to blossom. With enough senior players like Boyd and Morris and Murphy, etc., picking in the team to help them. But what you were saying is spot on. We had to move those guys on, and we're better for it. Probably even better for not having Griffin in a funny way.
You are better for it. Griffin, sometimes these things are forced on you. There is good planning, and then there is good luck that comes in with the planning. For St Kilda, their good luck has been, and this might sound very, very strange, St Kilda is on the rebuild again. And they can do it from a position where you need to rebuild from, which is the bottom of the ladder. And they've been able to do it twice, with all due respect to the great Tim Watson, footballer and media man. His coaching career wasn't great, but his time at St Kilda plummeted them to the bottom very quickly. Scott Waters did the same for the Saints. You can't orchestrate going to the bottom. If you do, it'll destroy your club. But if you can accidentally appoint the wrong coach, then the rebuild can start and be forced upon you hastily, and that has happened twice at St Kilda. And for the Doggies, the forced loss of Griffin through circumstances has been an absolute win. A break, and when we come back, absolute win. Adelaide over Brisbane, didn't look so at three-quarter time. It's taken apart, dismantled by the greatest dismantler of them all, Robert Shaw, coach.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650 4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football, the Brisbane Lions. Adelaide.
We're the pride of South Australia. Then Burleigh quick to go to Thompson. Gave it across to McKay. Full of running down the Crows. McKay kicks long. It's a two-on-two inside forward 50. Jenkins. He's played on. He gave it to Eddie Betts. Goal! Back-to-back goals for the Crows.
No, very ordinary for three quarters. But very happy with the finish. So I'm a glass half full man. So like most of our fans at home, and we had quite a number of fans make the trip up, and they gave me a bit of advice as I was coming off the ground at quarter time and three quarter time routes. So yeah, pretty frustrating three quarters. Then I'm pretty proud of the group, what they came up with at the end.
That's Adelaide's coach Philip Walsh talking about a game that they got away with. And during the week he made analogies between the work of Vincent van Gogh and his tortured paintings and that of the Adelaide Football Club's travails and highs and lows this season. And I think for three quarters he was talking about an Adelaide that was finger painting with kids in the kindergarten.
Well,
and
you know, I was going to say that.
By the end they might have found the brushes, but I'm not quite sure they found their Van Gogh.
His game was like my four-year-old grandson's finger painting at daycare, I tell you.
Just on the game, it was 11-16-82, 10-9-69, and 18,146 thought they were watching a Brisbane win until it fell apart in the last quarter. What happened?
I got home at half time to see the, they're three goals up. They increased that. It was 10-7 to 5-13. And back of the dominance of Big Jacobs is a bit of a concern, I reckon. They've either worked him out or he's got a bit slower. He can't get around the ground. Because once again, Stephen Martin, working in tandem with Lauenberger, who played probably his best game for the year, it would have been, really dominated that situation for them and gave Beams, the impressive Zorko, who also had his best game, young Louis Taylor, who's been criticised for not being taggable because he doesn't hurt you, really tried to kick the ball long and be a penetrating player. I thought he was very, very good. And, of course, as I saw it, I saw the second half, Mark, and I thought this bloke, he's going to take this game apart. And he should have actually won him the game. He dropped a mark in the goal square where he flew, and that was Daniel McStay. And I'm thinking, this bloke is going to be a fair player. Then I've checked the stats this morning. He's had 2 and 2. He's had 3 marks and didn't touch the ball in the first half.
Yeah.
And he looked to be the player that could take Brisbane across the line. So all these blokes have run and they had a commitment to handball. They probably saw that Adelaide, A, couldn't defend against really quick-moving sides and they could go through them. They certainly did that. But in the end, the experience kicked in. I thought they tied significantly. As you know, they only kicked 3 points in the last quarter, 6-3. Adelaide's resurgence was where you thought it would come from. Their experienced players. Their captain kicked 2 very important goals for them. Thompson was sensational in the middle of the ground. Just that extra body size. Walker with his physical strength. He had a great battle with young Andrews, who we thought...
Harris Andrews.
What's this kid going to be? Where is he? Centre half forward, centre half back? But
who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Zach Dawson in, like, hyperspeed. Remember Zach at Hawthorn was that gangly Sav Rocker? Or yeah. Was it Sav Rocker victim or Anthony Rocker? Maybe an Anthony Rocker victim.
Anthony later, yeah.
Well, Harris Andrews, and then he became a decent to a very good fullback at St Kilda, now needed at the Dockers, injured. But Ross Lyon...
On 11.16 SEN, we're first at the footy every Sunday morning.
From a tactical point of view, it was very smart and he had very experienced players against 2 very inexperienced boys.
With full-on footy analysis.
Consistency and all that is fantastic. But at some time during a game, you have to stand up as a coach and say, I'm going to make this move. I'm going to change the course of the game from my position as a coach.
Welcome to Inside Football with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555.
Welcome back to Full on Footy, second hour of Inside Football. Robert Shaw to analyse, plenty to discuss in The two games we'll be looking at, Friday night gets a look-see because of the abbreviated round. We don't normally look at the Friday night game, and certainly Hawthorn Essendon as well. John Ralph will join us in a moment. Of course, Rory Sloane and James Frawley, two major injuries out of yesterday's football. Much to talk about with Match Review panel. Just a couple of things, Robert, that you don't see often from local football yesterday. Two rarities. You don't often see a triple premiership player from the AFL playing in the reserves in D1 in the amateurs. But if you're at North Old Boys yesterday, that's what you would have seen, as Mal Michael played his first game for Ormond. And Mal is at Ormond as a result of a promise he made to his dad that he would finish his career with the Maunders. Had a knee op that has cost him the first half of the season, and to get some fitness and touch, played in the Resies in D1 yesterday. So that's a triple premiership player doing that. And I don't know who you are, sir, but number 71 for the club 18.
Number what?
71 for the club 18 at Albert Parker. I'm not supposed to do this. I could get a lifetime ban, but you got the 3 votes yesterday, mate. And if I had it my way, you would have got the 2 and the 1 and the car and anything else, because you are that was the most freakish thing I've seen at a low level of football. I'd love to know who you are, and also,
well, the ring highest in, not level, ring in, just put on the SMS. Like,
if anybody can tell me the highest level of football and who he is.
Number 71 for Ormond.
For Albert Park.
Albert Park.
Albert Park. Going grey, so you're not a baby, but I'd love to know what the highest level of football you played was. Let's catch up now with John Ralph from the Herald's Sun, from SEN, from Fox Football, from, I guess, a movie cinema coming out soon, the John Ralph movie. That's all we need. Described on Friday Night Football as having a magnificent body, and by the boys back in the Fox studio. So, Mr. Hollywood, John Ralph, how are you?
Hello, boys. Yeah, thanks for that. Yes, I'm not sure that fit, the description fits. Hey, I played a lot of football at full forward in D1 in the reserve. So fair to say, if Mal Michael had just walked up to me at the first bounce, I might have just gone into a fetal position, I think. So I'm glad.
I think you would have had to play full back, because I don't know how things panned out. There's an electronic scoreboard at Ormond. And to be fair, yesterday for the club 18s, there would have been 7 people watching. Richard Simons, who sure he knows very well from Brighton Grammar, was operating the scoreboard, and he didn't put the score up. He just had this thing on the scoreboard. Mal Michael kicks opening goal in the Resies. So I'm assuming he played it full forward.
Hey, boys, obviously a lot to talk about today. The first issue, and you've covered it really well, is obviously the Sam Mitchell incident there. Now, the AFL will be asked today whether there's any further action there, but I'm certain that that won't be the case. Look, it was handled well in his press conference. The one thing I would say is that the talk about the propaganda and the naive and all those kind of things, some of those words will be used against James today, but as you would say, encourage everyone to look at the entire press conference.
Yeah, if you listen to the entire conference, and his great respect for Hawthorn and how big those games are and the rivalry, and just the whole press conference was very interesting, and I thought well handled.
No, absolutely. So, look, Sam Mitchell has apologised or expressed regret, whatever the phrase you want to use, and I think it was done well by Hawthorn, at least, that he would get out there and didn't become a 3-day story. So, look, we'll move on there and nothing more to see. James Frawley, though, now, as much as in his press conference, Alistair Clarkson said, look, it'll be scanned and we'll look at it. I think Hawthorn is bracing themselves for him to miss the rest of the year. Now, if that's any kind of damage to that shoulder, he's likely to have a reco, and, of course, that'll put him out for 4 months. So maybe they might do what they did with Daisy Thomas and try to strap it up, but I think we all saw that Daisy Thomas didn't handle that really well and probably could have had surgery straight away. So it'll be a decision to make, but I don't necessarily think a really tough decision.
John, Shorey here, mate. Just a quick one for you. Sorry about the question without notice. Yesterday's back line, minus Frawley, was Hodge, Stratton, Lake, Gibson, Jurea, Birchall. Stacks up against any back line. But they want to use Hodge elsewhere, midfield come finals. They took they started Burgoyne in the middle. So where I'm leading is, where is Spanger? And his chances of returning as the cult figure and the key player in Hawthorn's lead into the finals.
Oh, they're excellent. Look, he's had, I think, as much as a month of football.
He came off yesterday injured, though.
He has he, Mark? Now, I'm not up to date with it. So,
okay, I haven't seen
Hawthorn supporters. Where's Spanger?
He played for Box Hill yesterday and came off with an ankle concern.
Right.
Okay, so that's what, 13 players have actually got AFL experience there. So, look, I wasn't aware of that Spanger incident. So, until then, they had so many players in reserve. And, look, we know even young Daniel Howe, who's only played one game, but they love him in defence as well. And, look, there's a few options there. But, as you say, if Spanger's gone down injured, that's going to be a bit of a setback.
Right up.
Let's move to Rory Sloane, and that's a big setback for the Crows midfield.
Oh, it is. Now, that's likely to be at least 6 weeks with a fractured cheekbone. Now, that was an incident involving Mitch Robinson, a purely accidental from his point of view. But we know that's exactly the spot where he had that cheekbone incident before that did keep him out. And so you'd think that they would have to be cautious as he returns. And so they're pushing for finals. Yes, a good fighting win, but that's a huge repercussion from a side that's probably going to miss Rory Sloane for, what, six of the 10 remaining home and away rounds.
And an honest incident. Both players fully committed to the football.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, you know, Robinson, he's mad, let's face it. But certainly nothing there that would attract any match review panel incident.
Pierce Hanley's not the first person coming back from a knee to have problems with his soft tissue.
That's right. Now, it was described as hamstring soreness by Justin Lepich. And Justin Lepich actually said that he had a good chance of playing against Fremantle next week. But you've got to say he's in some doubt. It got sore as the game went on. They pushed him forward there and he got really tired and was quite fatigued. And so, again, he'll have scans and all those kind of things. But as much as the coach seemed optimistic, the last thing you want to do is get Pierce Hanley back and then push him hard and he does a 4 or 5 week hamstring injury.
Sam Fisher was named but didn't appear.
That's right, yeah. And did an injury, a back injury, potentially even a disc injury, picking up the laundry. Also, Alan Richardson said. Now, I would think they'd be fined $20,000 for that. Now, as much as clubs can give notice the day before, if a player is brought in from outside the emergencies, as Delaney was, well, it normally is a $20,000 fine. And look, in this case, clearly there was an explanation. But I just think the AFL would want to be consistent, because if you start saying, well, you know, the dog ate my homework or whatever it might be, if you start making excuses and are not fined, then it might be a growing trend amongst other clubs.
I think he should be fined $20,000 for picking up the laundry. I completely separate myself from such matters.
That might give you a life ban. Don't worry about the other stuff.
If my wife is listening, she will be now having laundry for me to pick up. And so you can say what you want on air, mate, but in here, I'm the coach. Back in the house, I'm the coach. I'll pay for that one. Let's go to the match review panel. Everybody's talking about Swans and the Tigers and, of course, those two incidents with the key forwards, the big money men down at the Sydney Swans.
Absolutely. Look, a lot of people have said, I think that the Lance Franklin incident has to be intentional. Of course, that hit on Shane Edwards. Look, all I would say is that in most of those incidents in the past couple of years, they've been seen to be careless. The ball is in the vicinity. Of course, we know that he ran past the ball. So I still think that will be adjudged as careless. And then you look at medium or high impact. Now, if you want to say it's high, then he gets 3 weeks down to two. If you want to say it's medium, he gets 2 weeks down to one. Now, we know that there's four scales, severe, high, medium and low. And I still think it could fit into that medium, given that Edwards came back on after a concussion test. He passed that test and he played football again in the second half.
I heard audio of Wayne Britton on our coverage last night making a spirited defence of Buddy Franklin, asking what else could he do. If he went low, he could have taken out his legs. I'll tell you what else he could have done. He could have not tried to absolutely obliterate Edwards. That would have been a start. That's a really good kicking off point for trying not to get suspended. He showed none of the what I think the AFL has been desperate to impart on players, and that is care for somebody with their head over the ball.
Well, and that's if you want to make the case that he deserves to miss 2 weeks, well, the match review panel can say we believe it had the capacity to cause serious injury. And can elevate the scale so they can turn it from medium to high. So that's why it's a little bit hard to predict. But look, I think if he missed 2 weeks, I think we all believe that he went the man rather than the ball. And so it would probably fit comfortably. All I'm saying is it might be that he only misses one.
Tippett belted the bloke in that marking contest and he'll go.
He will. Look, I know it wasn't Luke Hodge who walked up to Swallow and belted him in the head, but, you know, it seemed malicious. It seemed a bit cowardly. And so, again, whether they'll describe that as intentional, if they described it as intentional and high, I'd go straight to the tribunal. If they thought it was intentional and medium, it's 2 weeks. I really don't think we want to see blokes elbowing others in the head. And I know the ball was coming down and he misjudged it, but yeah, when he elbows a player, and that was Dylan Grimes from Richmond, in the head, yeah, I, having thought about it over the weekend, I reckon if you missed 2 weeks, I think that'd be appropriate.
WTF is a very popular three-letterer for Twitter followers and SMSs and blog room fans. And I was WTFing this Edwards, was it an interchange? What do you call that situation where he came on early and there was a free kick given? What went on with that?
Well, I think you call it an interchange infraction. So what happens is that the club says we will have an institute, whatever it is, bring about a 20-minute concussion sub. So they have 20 minutes. And that's 20 minutes of pure time on your clock, not 20 minutes that includes 7 minutes, that includes 17 minutes of half time, or that is in addition to that. And so what Richmond has told me yesterday is that we were told by the interchange steward that Edwards was ready to go back on, and he went back on. Then, within minutes, we were told that that had been a mistake and we had brought him on a minute 20 early. Now, it might well be that he was brought on a minute 20 early, but I think we would feel like if the interchange steward says you can go on, well, the AFL governs all those kind of things. Now, I can't think of that ever happening again. So we're sort of in uncharted territory a little bit in terms of the protocols of it all. But what we do know is that Richmond will follow it up.
Who called the free kick?
Well, the interchange steward.
Now, so hang on, he said go on, and then he said, yeah, go on, now it's a free.
Yeah, he said go on, and then a couple of minutes later he said, no, you weren't right to go on. And what happened?
he needs to stop arguing with himself.
Exactly. And all I can say at the moment is that's what Richmond is telling us. The AFL are saying we're investigating. And so, look, it might well come out that Richmond stuffed it up. But all I'm saying is what Richmond's interpretation of events is. Now, from there, the AFL told us yesterday that because Edwards was in the centre square when the free kick was called, it's a 50-metre penalty and free kick from where Edwards was. So the protocol afterwards, which saw Nick Smith have a kick, was right. But I reckon if you tick a bloke off and then you penalise him, it's unfair. And as I say, all I'm saying is that's what Richmond is saying. In the fullness of time, we'll actually find out the real version or exactly what happened.
A couple of things. First of all, the only person who showed any protocol was Nick Smith, who missed the goal. And the AFL, actually, we're dealing with a matter that, it for people who like logic to be applied, here's an opportunity to just say that it doesn't make sense. The 20-minute concussion rule is a medically imposed 20 minutes for assessment. The fact that it spans half-time doesn't matter. If it's 20 minutes medically, it's 20 minutes on the clock medically. Edwards hasn't gone off. It's not a sending off in a lower grade of football where 20 minutes needs to be 20 minutes of actual play time. So in, say, the amateurs, if you're sent off for 20 minutes, you have to be off for 20 minutes of game time. But if it's a medical situation, then why does it have to be 20 minutes of game time, not counting the time of the half time? That implies like it's a penalty, but it's not. It's a medical situation.
No, I agree. I explained that poorly. As of last year, it was 20 minutes of game time. And so you might be concussed in 5 minutes to go in the second quarter, and you'd only get back late in the third quarter. What it is now is 20 minutes on the clock.
It should be. That is what it should be.
Yeah, I asked Mark Evans about it this week because I said, well, you know, wouldn't you want to extend the bloke who comes back, the sub, so he gets 40 minutes of game time, so you get lots of rotation? He said, no, clubs are actually keener to get their players back quickly, and so it's almost penalising them to also include half time. So I think what they've done is actually helped players who are not concussed get back quicker. That's fantastic, but you've got to apply the sub rule correctly, or rather the interchange correctly.
Well, it's just when you thought We've seen it all and everything is covered, there are more issues. And we dodged a bullet last night at Etihad Stadium, John, because how on earth in 2015, after what happened down in Tasmania with St Kilda Fremantle those years ago, the siren suddenly went from a loud siren at Etihad Stadium to, in the second half, in a very close game, on two separate... You couldn't hear the siren twice at Etihad Stadium. They dodged a bullet there, let me tell you. So there's always something new, and they need to be on top of that. There was something wrong with the siren, and that could have been absolutely game. That could have been another huge embarrassment for the AFL and the stadium.
No, I agree. At least all I'd say is they do have safeguards. I think those timekeepers now can yell out if the umpire hasn't heard the siren eventually. But who would be Mark Evans for Quids? He just rolls in on a Monday morning. He's got 18 new issues, and half of them he's never even dealt with before. But you're right. You just got to get those things right, because it doesn't matter if you spend millions of dollars on player salaries or whatever it is. If you can't get the integrity of your game right, well, you haven't got a very good foundation.
And those siren issues, I advocate that a small device is planted inside the football, and rather than a siren, the ball explodes at the end of every quarter. And that
I thought you were going to say maybe, you know, a pacemaker is implanted in the, you know, that vibrates in the AFL umpire. So I think the ball would be an easier solution.
Yeah, just explode the ball, and in close games, players will be less likely to hang on to the ball.
Well, there are exploding golf balls, so I think someone needs to come up with that experiment. Yeah. And we'll trial it in the NAB Cup.
I'd like to see the player just standing there trying to waste time with the ball in his hand knowing it's about to blow up. Good on you, Ralphie.
Cheers.
Have a great day. Crown Bet odds for today's game. And Carlton are short, $1.45. Gold Coast, $2.85. The line is 14.5 points, and a lot of people thought that maybe if Ablett was coming back, Carlton might have a tougher task. No Ablett. The odds have again shortened for the Blues. We'll see how it plays out on SEN today. Break. And when we come back, plenty to talk about, not just the charades that Sam Mitchell was playing in the game against Essendon, but also a game that Hawthorn won seemingly all in one quarter of engaged football. Loves him. That took years. I reckon Harris Andrews has done all that from skinny, scorned, competitive to now good in 6 weeks. He's hyper-speeded Zach Dawson.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 1116 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. Hawthorn.
We're a happy team at Hawthorn.
Essendon.
Inside 50, Hales go be the target. Had him in his sights. He tapped down Wilt, pulled off the ball, kicks the ball off the ground. Here's a chance. Picked up by Gunson, runs into the open goal. Check sides are through.
They outpossessed us by a mile, particularly the second quarter. So we needed to address some of those things and appeal to our players. We didn't change much at half time, but except to appeal to them to be better in that area of the game. And I thought we were in the third quarter, and that gave us the chance to get the ball into our forward line a little bit more often and give us a chance to kick a score. And that third quarter was obviously pivotal to the game.
Certainly was. That's how it looked from the outside, with Hawthorn and Essendon level pegging thereabouts at half time. The Bombers maybe, in fact definitely, should have led at half time. And it seemed like an almost disengaged Hawthorn came out in the third quarter, flexed some muscles, and then went back to 99 in the last quarter. But the third quarter was certainly game deciding. Yesterday at the MCG, Hawthorn, 16-10-114, defeated the Bombers, 11-10-76. In that third quarter, the Hawks kicked 6-3-2-1. It was played out in front of 62,500 at the G. There were always going to be interesting stories coming out of the game. People will talk about Sam Mitchell, but I like talking about why Josh Gibson is a backman, and he showed yesterday why he's a backman, and a bloody good one. That was a heck of a miss, Joshy boy. And the back line is where you will be for the rest of your career and winning premierships and maybe even All-Australian. But no, the forward line's not for you, son. How did it all happen yesterday at the G, Shorey?
Well, you're right. You mentioned, the term unsociable. It only got a bit testy, really, during the Mitchell issue, because seeing many, many games like this. This was the most sociable game between these two sides for a long, long time. It was very difficult to get emotionally involved in it. I took the opportunity to sit in the press box and you're somewhat removed from the passion and intensity. But it looked a very, very flat game between two really traditional rivals. And at half time, the score reflected that 5-8 to 5-7. basically because Essendon's backline, which has been their strength all year, really stood up. They had an excellent game plan to force Hawthorn wide. They made Hawthorn go round the boundary and find options that they were happy to take, but not necessarily the areas of the areas that they wanted to kick to. So I thought Essendon did a very, very good job again defensively, which they've done really all year. Essendon, you're right, Mark, should have been in front. We come back to this goal-kicking situation. Danaher, too, Watson hit the post. Carlisle, Mr. Sitter. But then at the same time, in the third quarter, when Hawthorn did start to get going, Gunston, who finished with 3-4, missed some. So it all balances out in there. Interesting moves by both sides. Both chose to go with settled defences, but both made some significant tactical moves. Essendon tried to, I guess, become more creative in their forward half. They started with Joe Watson, which is always a discussion point. Your best clearance player, your captain out of the centre square. But he's also a very smart forward, and I can see the method in the suggested madness. Him and Goddard spent a lot more time, and I thought Goddard was very, very good, given the fact that my criticism of him has been behind the ball. And I thought he got forward of the ball more, he was more creative, and therefore he became more dangerous. So I thought he played a different type of game, and he changed with O'Brien, who they gave an opportunity to in the middle of the ground, number 10. He also changed with Watson. So it gave them a little bit more multi-dimension in their forward line. It didn't pan out, but at least they had a go at it. Their back line, again, Bagley, Gwilt, Hooker, Hurley, Hibbert and Dempsey was solid against a very good forward line. And then we move. So at halftime, Essendon done everything right. They'd curtailed a flat Hawthorn. Nothing against Essendon, but Hawthorn weren't their real nasty, aggressive best. And they've gone in with a real chance at halftime. Then the game changed. Hawthorn put Mitchell to the half-back flank. They also used Burgoyne a lot more in the centre square around the middle of the ground where he's, and Hodge went back to assist in the coverage of Lake's injury. The subs were significant. We've spoken about Ross at St Kilda. We've spoken about Webb at Footscray. Certainly Suckling, that is his spot, I feel, as the sub. He's come on and was very, very damaging. He spent time forward and a little bit more through the midfield, less in the back line. He replaced Lake, and young Kavanagh came in for Edwards, who had a pretty quiet game after some encouraging signs. But it was Hawthorn that really were stretched by Essendon, and they had to make some significant changes, and I thought this is where they won the game after half-time. They had to get the ball out of the centre square, and they did that. But listen to this forward line, Mark. This is the forward line they went with. In the rotation, Gunston found himself off the ground. They put Roughhead on the ball, who was magnificent all day. 6'5" ruck rover was superb. Siegler was deep. He took some marks deep. He kicked into Joe Danaher, and he missed a goal he should have got. This is their other forward line. This is with Gunston off the ground. Shields, Hill, Poapolo, Langford, Suckling. So what happened? They went very small.
Now, Suckling was playing as a result of Frawley's injury.
And Rioli's... Oh, probably. Yeah.
Well, but he was sub, wasn't he?
He was sub, and I'm saying he had an effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
So they went very small. Now, what happened
how they used Suckling going forwards.
Yeah. Well, that's the point I was trying to make. Then they brought Langford back on, Segler in the ruck, and they took Hale off. So they went very, very small. All of a sudden, Essendon, which had been so well organised in the back line... They were so good in their back line, and in that area of the ground, they're as good as anyone in the competition. They support well, they're good in the air, they clear the ball to the first kick. It's after that that Essendon have broken down all year, and we've discussed that at times. Langford played forward. Poapolo ended up with 4. Hill ended up with 3. Shields was damaging. He's usually the run within the middle of the ground, and it really unbalanced them. You had a situation there when Gunston came back on the ground that the matchup was Bagley versus Gunston, and Hurley and Hooker found themselves on the combination of Shields, Poapolo, and it really unbalanced Essendon's back line. I think it was a significant, and allowed Hawthorn to kick away to those 6 goals. I know they got on top in the centre bounces, but they really... It was really interesting to watch because naturally Hurley and Hooker locked themselves into the key big targets and there were none there. So They really, and Poipolo got two, this was interesting, you know, it was in the press box and a lot of the people were disappointed. Look, Hurley tackled, Mark, you tackle where, I can explain it the best way, you tackle where you look. So if I go to tackle you and I'm looking at your face or your shoulders, you're 90% going to tackle there. But if I look at your hips and focus on your hips, I'm 90% going to tackle there. Yes, Poipolo, he didn't duck, but he did it very well. He lowered his weight, lowered his body height, if Paul Poipolo can actually lower his body height. But he dropped his legs.
Do you know what Scott Lucas said of Paul Poipolo?
What did he say?
He said he's the only bloke with a beard that is too short to go on the rides at SeaWorld and Movie World.
That's a bit unfair, but he dropped and he got two free kicks and kicked two goals, which upset a lot of people. It wasn't a ducking motion. He lowered his body. Hurley in particular went too high, looked at the head, looked at the shoulders and tackled accordingly when they dropped. So that was significant.
The one thing that has to be remembered, when a player does that, they are, and it's all very instantaneous, but I think players now need almost to train for this. You need to get, it's very important that these players that go, that do drop a little, it does affect their trading off running with the ball and moving.
It was in tight situation.
I'm saying,
though.
But you come to a stop when you do it. It's not something you can't duck and run, basically. And even though you are sort of committed to the tackle, you don't necessarily have to launch into these players. They're drawing you towards them, but they're not necessarily going to take you on and run past you. So I've watched it carefully. I've watched the Poipolo incidents and some of the other players that do this. Players need to, I think, learn about corralling players rather than over-committing to tackling them.
Both tacklers went in straight at the tackle.
Yeah.
It was very close to goal. Both, one was one side of the goal, at the goal square, one was the other. Only 5 to 10 metres out both times. So it made it difficult. You had to go. But you raise a good point. For Essendon, the standout player is a real shining light for them. Their quality, Watson was flat. I don't know whether he's injured. I don't know whether he's just flat because of the weight that he's had to bear over the supplement saga. I didn't think it was an indictment putting him in half forward. I thought it was a creative move that tried to get Goddard and him as more genuine goal kickers and put a little bit of pressure on Hawthorn. But their classiest player and a real constant for them was young Zach Merritt. He was outstanding. He had nearly 30 possessions. He played on a wing, on hill. He went into the centre bounces, and he even pushed forward at times. So he played three positions for a developing player. He's a very, very exciting player. He's got good pace. He's generally got very, very good poise. We've had Joe Danner in here, and you ask him the question, you know, when do your eyes light up when someone gets it in the midfield? And you're thinking Goddard and Watson and Stanton, all those sort of blokes. He was unequivocal in his support of Zach Merritt. He played a terrific game. Mitchell was a constant. There was a good battle between Melkstrom and Lewis, right? Lewis played most of the game in the midfield. Melkstrom tried to get into him in the general theme of rotations. Essendon didn't go away. Hawthorn at one stage really got to 30 points up very quickly into the third quarter. And you're starting to think, well, could they add another four and turn this into a bit of an embarrassing? But Essendon hung in. They kept committing. There's no doubt they committed to their game plan. And 38 points, I think it was a... For Hawthorn-Essendon games, I just think it was a run-of-the-mill game. Essendon brought back Winderlich. They lost Collier, which was a real loss for them. But at the same time, I guess Hawthorn would have preferred to have Rioli out in the ground too, so that balances out pretty well.
I want to talk about some interesting players for Essendon and where are they and what are they for the team. We saw yesterday, this would have happened regardless of the injury to Bell Chambers, Corey McKernan take up a position in the ruck. He was beaten in the ruck, but showed good value around the ground.
Can I just speak about it? Yeah. I thought
terrific early, spring, marking, kicked a nice goal.
Yep.
But to me, lack of senior games, maybe told. He did tire and he did make some tired sort of errors in the second half of the game. But on what I saw, he gave a terrific contest. He's got a good leap and he can mark the footy. So I hope they continue with that.
Well, they have to. It's Tim or Giles
yeah.
for the next 8 weeks. Well, maybe for the rest of the season.
Well, I'll be having a real, real good look at McKernan, giving him every opportunity.
Courtney Dempsey is interesting. Now, Courtney Dempsey nominally is an outlet player, run and carry for Essendon. They seemed keener to put the ball in James Gwilt's hands than Courtney Dempsey's hands. He only had 6 uncontested possessions. I don't know whether he's working hard enough to create that Lincoln run that he's in the team for.
I would have suggested that is Essendon's query. They have dropped him. They have brought him back. He was brought back, I think he was dropped last week, and he's been brought back in. He's had 10 kicks, 4 handballs.
But only 6 uncontested. He couldn't go
with some of those small blokes, and in the end they had to move him forward. I don't know why they move people, but one of the reasons they put Windelick back to halfback flank, who can do that job at times. That was his first run for a long time. You couldn't expect it.
Oh, no problems there. But with Johannesson of the Bulldogs, we talk about risk and reward. The risk with Johannesson is when he runs off his players, that his opponent, if he has direct opponents, and everybody does in a back line at some point in time have a responsibility, can burn you the other way. But Johannesson is deemed so valuable for the Bulldogs that they accept that it might cost them some scoreboard, but they like his run. For Courtney Dempsey, where's the risk and reward? I mean, is he now a player playing as a lockdown defender on small forwards? Because there doesn't seem to be the reward anymore.
Well, the small forwards kick goals. I talked about the mismatches at times where they caught out, and I don't blame the coaching panel at all because it happened so quickly and back lines have got to adjust, and they went small. And they got great reward out of their small forwards, Hawthorn. But there must be communication. And Dempsey is one of those players that if Hill comes forward, he must go to him. He must go to a Paulopoulos.
I thought Hill was very good yesterday.
Yeah, well, especially going forward. And they didn't use him entirely on the wing all the time. Look, I'd hate to say this because it is disrespectful to Essendon. Once they got in front, they did have a look at a few options. They tend to do that, Hawthorn. And there was just some subtle moves they made. Look, they probably had to make them to create some life into their team. The game wasn't out of control by any means, but they weren't playing well. So Clarkson has made these moves and really, he probably got into them a little bit at halftime, I would have thought, because they weren't very physical and it wasn't a physical game. I went from one game to the other and I found the Western Bulldogs game versus St Kilda, a far more intense, competitive match, which obviously was on the scoreboard.
This was paid at arm's length, given the...
And it just looked like once Hawthorn controlled it, they controlled it. Essendon didn't give up. They made some moves. They tried to be creative with their forward line. They realised that their forward line's the problem. They had the normal issues with some of their goal kicking, but Carlisle fought it out well, got 3, should have kicked 4. There's no doubt about that. Their back line did a right big roughy, you know, was influential, but it was up the ground, midfield, centre-half forward. Yeah, which is a great sign for them to be able to do that. They were tested and they were able to get out of it and they were able to practice the things when they are under pressure, when their scores aren't close, what will we do in this situation? Because remember, they didn't have a Rioli to try and ignite them and get them going. Took the opportunity to put Mitchell off half-back. So they did some,
It was that sort of game. Yeah.
It was that sort of game, Mark.
You know, we celebrate great football stories. The emergence of Nat Fyfe as a true champion of the game, a future, seemingly very near future Brownlow medalist. But it is really sad to see Adam Cooney, who was a champion and a Brownlow medalist, physically disintegrate every time he plays football. He had the week off. And he looked bloody good with that week off in the first quarter
half was very good. He was
and
sharp.
That's because that's what his body lets him do. A week off and for a half, he looked really good. And that bloody knee of his, that degenerative knee situation, And what it's done to his body means that even in a game, his physical disintegration in an afternoon is so sad to watch for a true champion, which is what Adam Cooney, fully fit, was.
Well, he had 13 in the first half, Mark.
He barely had it in the second.
Yeah, 1 and 2. Yeah.
Oh, it's sad. It's sad because he was a champion and even can be again if you give him a week off. But in 4 quarters, it's not working.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. Hawthorne.
We're a happy team at Hawthorne. We're the mighty fighting Hawthorne.
Essendon.
Inside 50, Hales going to be the target. Had him in his sights. He tapped down Wilt, pulled off the ball, kicks the ball off the ground. Here's a chance. Picked up by Gunson, runs into the open goal. Check sides are through.
They outpossessed us by a mile, particularly the second quarter. So we needed to address some of those things and appeal to our players. We didn't change much at half time, but except to appeal to them to be better in that area of the game. And I thought we were in the third quarter, and that gave us the chance to get the ball into our forward line a little bit more often and give us a chance to kick a score. And that third quarter was obviously pivotal to the game.
Certainly was. That's how it looked from the outside, with Hawthorne and Essendon level pegging thereabouts at half time. The Bombers maybe, in fact definitely, should have led at half time. And it seemed like an almost disengaged Hawthorne came out in the third quarter, flexed some muscles, and then went back to 99 in the last quarter. But the third quarter was certainly game deciding. Yesterday at the MCG, Hawthorne 16-10, 114, defeated the Bombers 11-10, 76. In that third quarter, the Hawks kicked 6-3 to 2-1. It was played out in front of 62,500 at the G. There were always going to be interesting stories coming out of the game. People will talk about Sam Mitchell, but I like talking about why Josh Gibson is a backman, and he showed yesterday why he's a backman, and a bloody good one. That was a heck of a miss, Joshy boy. And the back line is where you will be for the rest of your career and winning premierships and maybe even All-Australian, but no, the forward line's not for you, son. How did it all happen yesterday at the G, Shorey?
Well, you're right. You mentioned, the term unsociable. It only got a bit testy, really, during the Mitchell issue, because seeing many, many games like this, this was the most sociable game between those two sides for a long, long time. It was very difficult to get emotionally involved in it. It took the opportunity to sit in the press box and you're somewhat removed from the passion and intensity, but it looked a very, very flat game between two really traditional rivals. And at half time, the score reflected that 5-8 to 5-7, basically because Essendon's backline, which has been their strength all year, really stood up. They had an excellent game plan to force Hawthorne wide. They made Hawthorne go around the boundary and find options that they were happy to take, but not necessarily the areas that they wanted to kick to. So I thought Essendon did a very, very good job again defensively, which they've done really all year. Essendon, you're right, Mark, should have been in front. We come back to this goal-kicking situation. Danaher, too. Watson hit the post. Carlisle, Mr. Sitter. But then at the same time, in the third quarter, when Hawthorne did start to get going, Gunston, who finished with 3-4, missed them. So it all balances out in there. Interesting moves by both sides. Both chose to go with settled defences, but both made some significant tactical moves. Essendon tried to, I guess, become more creative in their forward half. They started with Joe Watson, which is always a discussion point, your best clearance player, your captain out of the centre square. But he's also a very smart forward, and I can see the method in the suggested madness. Him and Goddard spent a lot more time, and I thought Goddard was very, very good, given the fact that my criticism of him has been behind the ball, and I thought he got forward of the ball more, he was more creative, and therefore he became more dangerous. So I thought he played a different type of game, and he changed with O'Brien, who they gave an opportunity to in the middle of the ground, number 10. He also changed with Watson. So it gave them a little bit more multi-dimension in their forward line. It didn't pan out, but at least they had a go at it. Their back line, again, Bagley, Gwilt, Hooker, Hurley, Hibbert and Dempsey was solid against a very good forward line. And then we move. So at halftime, Essendon done everything right. They'd curtailed a flat Hawthorn. Nothing against Essendon, but Hawthorn weren't their real nasty, aggressive best. And they've gone in with a real chance at halftime. Then the game changed. Hawthorn put Mitchell to the halfback flank. They also used Burgoyne a lot more in the centre square around the middle of the ground, where he's, and Hodge went back to assist in the coverage of Lake's injury. The subs were significant. We've spoken about Ross at St Kilda. We've spoken about Webb at Footscray. Certainly Suckling, that is his spot, I feel, as the sub. He's come on and was very, very damaging. He spent time forward and a little bit more through the midfield, less in the back line. He replaced Lake, and young Kavanagh came in for Edwards, who had a pretty quiet game after some encouraging signs. But it was Hawthorn that really were stretched by Essendon, and they had to make some significant changes, and I thought this is where they won the game after half-time. They had to get the ball out of the centre square, and they did that. But listen to this forward line, Mark. This is the forward line they went with. In the rotation, Gunston found himself off the ground. They put Roughhead on the ball, who was magnificent all day. 6'5" ruck rover was superb. Siegler was deep. He took some marks deep. He kicked into Joe Danaher, and he missed a goal he should have got. This is their other forward line. This is with Gunston off the ground. Shields, Hill, Poapolo, Langford, Suckling. So what happened? They went very small.
Now, Suckling was playing as a result of Frawley's injury.
And Rioli's... Oh, probably. Yeah.
Well, but he was sub, wasn't he?
He was sub, and I'm saying he had an effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
So they went very small. Now, what happened
how they used Suckling going forwards.
Yeah. Well, that's the point I was trying to make. Then they brought Langford back on, Segler in the ruck, and they took Hale off. So they went very, very small. All of a sudden, Essendon, which had been so well organised in the back line... They were so good in their back line, and in that area of the ground, they're as good as anyone in the competition. They support well, they're good in the air, they clear the ball to the first kick. It's after that that Essendon have broken down all year, and we've discussed that at times. Langford played forward. Poapolo ended up with 4. Hill ended up with 3. Shields was damaging. He's usually the run within the middle of the ground. And it really unbalanced them. You had a situation there when Gunston came back on the ground that the matchup was Bagley versus Gunston. And Hurley and Hooker found themselves on the combination of Shields, Poapolo. And it really unbalanced Essendon's back line. I think it was a significant... And allowed Hawthorn to kick away to those 6 goals. I know they got on top in the centre bounces, but they really... It was really interesting to watch because naturally Hurley and Hooker locked themselves into the key big targets and there were none there. There were none there. So they really... And Poapolo got two... This was interesting. You know, it was in the press box and a lot of the people were disappointed. Look, Hurley tackled... Mark, you tackle where... I can explain it the best way. You tackle where you look. So if I go to tackle you and I'm looking at your face or your shoulders, you're 90% going to tackle there. But if I look at your hips and focus on your hips, I'm 90% going to tackle there. Yes, Poapolo, he didn't duck, but he did it very well. He lowered his weight, lowered his body height, if Paul Poapolo can actually lower his body height. But he dropped his legs.
Do you know what Scott Lucas said of Paul Poapolo?
What did he say?
He said he's the only bloke... with a beard that is too short to go on the rides at SeaWorld and Movie World.
That's a bit unfair, but he dropped it and he got 2 free kicks and kicked 2 goals, which upset a lot of people. It wasn't a ducking motion. He lowered his body. Hurley in particular went too high, looked at the head, looked at the shoulders and tackled accordingly when they dropped. So that was significant.
The one thing that has to be remembered, when a player does that, they are, and it's all very instantaneous, but I think players now need almost to train for this. You need to get... It's very important that these players that go, that do drop a little, it does affect their... They're trading off running with the ball and moving.
Well, it was in tight situation.
I'm saying,
though.
but they you come to a stop when you do it. It's not something you can... You can't duck and run, basically. And even though it's you are sort of committed to the tackle, you don't necessarily have to launch into these players. They're drawing you towards them, but they're not necessarily going to take you on and run past you. So I've watched it carefully. I've watched the Puopolo incidents and some of the other players that do this. Players need to, I think, learn about corralling players rather than over-committing to tackling them.
Both tacklers went in straight at the tackle.
Yeah.
It was very close to goal. One was one side of the goal, at the goal square, one was the other. Only 5 to 10 metres out both times. So it made it difficult. You had to go. But you raise a good point. For Essendon, the standout player is a real shining light for them. Their quality, Watson was flat. I don't know whether he's injured. I don't know whether he's just flat because of the weight that he's had to bear over the supplement saga. I didn't think it was an indictment putting him in half forward. I thought it was a creative move that tried to get Goddard and him as more genuine goal kickers and put a little bit of pressure on Hawthorn. But their classiest player and a real constant for them was young Zach Merritt. He was outstanding. He had nearly 30 possessions. He played on a wing, on hill. He went into the centre bounces, and he even pushed forward at times. So he played three positions for a developing player. He's a very, very exciting player. He's got good pace. He's generally got very, very good poise. We've had Joe Dannery in here, and you ask him the question, you know, when do your eyes light up when someone gets it in the midfield? And you're thinking Goddard and Watson and Stanton, all those sort of blokes. He was unequivocal in his support of Zach Merritt. He played a terrific game. Mitchell was a constant. There was a good battle between Melstrom and Lewis, right? Lewis played most of the game in the midfield. Melstrom tried to get into him in the general theme of rotations. Essendon didn't go away. Hawthorn at one stage really got to 30 points up very quickly into the third quarter. And you're starting to think, well, could they add another four and turn this into a bit of an embarrassing... But Essendon hung in. They kept committing. There's no doubt they committed to their game plan. And 38 points, I think it was a... For Hawthorn-Essendon games, I just think it was a run-of-the-mill game. Essendon brought back Winderlich. They lost Collier, which was a real loss for them. But at the same time, I guess Hawthorn would have preferred to have Rioli out in the ground too, so that balances out pretty well.
I want to talk about some interesting players for Essendon and where are they and what are they for the team. We saw yesterday, this would have happened regardless of the injury to Bell Chambers, Corey McKernan take up a position in the ruck. He was beaten in the ruck, but showed good value around the ground.
Can I just speak about it? Yeah. I thought it terrific early, spring, marking, kicked a nice goal.
Yep.
But to me, lack of senior games, maybe told. He did tire and he did make some tired sort of errors in the second half of the game. But on what I saw, he gave a terrific contest. He's got a good leap and he can mark the footy. So I hope they continue with that.
Well, they have to. Tim or Giles
for
the next 8 weeks. For the rest of the season.
Well, I'll be having a real, real good look at McKernan and giving him every opportunity.
Courtney Dempsey is interesting. Now, Courtney Dempsey nominally is an outlet player, run and carry for Essendon. They seemed keener to put the ball in James Gwilt's hands than Courtney Dempsey's hands. He only had 6 uncontested possessions. I don't know whether he's working hard enough to create that Lincoln run that he's in the team for.
I would have suggested that is Essendon's query. They have dropped him. They have brought him back. He was brought back, I think he was dropped last week, and he's been brought back in. He's had 10 kicks, 4 handballs.
But so only 6 uncontested. He couldn't go
with some of those small blokes, and in the end they had to move him forward. I don't know. You don't know why they move people, but one of the reasons they put Windelick back to halfback flank, who can do that job at times. That was his first run for a long time. You couldn't expect it.
Oh, no problems there. But with Johannesson of the Bulldogs, we talk about risk and reward. The risk with Johannesson is when he runs off his players, that his opponent, if he has direct opponents, and everybody does in a back line at some point in time, have a responsibility, can burn you the other way. But Johannesson is deemed so valuable for the Bulldogs that they accept that it might cost them some scoreboard, but they like his run. For Courtney Dempsey, where's the risk and reward? I mean, is he now a player playing as a lockdown defender on small forwards? Because there doesn't seem to be the reward anymore.
Well, the small forwards kick goals. I talked about the mismatches at times where they caught out, and I don't blame the coaching panel at all, because it happened so quickly and backlines have got to adjust, and they went small. And they got great reward out of their small forwards, Hawthorn. But there must be communication. And Dempsey is one of those players that if Hill comes forward, he must go to him. He must go to a Paulopolo.
I thought Hill was very good yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, well, especially going forward. And they didn't use him entirely on the wing all the time. Look, I'd hate to say this because it is disrespectful to Essendon. Once they got in front, they did have a look at a few options. They tend to do that, Hawthorn. And there was just some subtle moves they made. Look, they probably had to make them to create some life into their team. The game wasn't out of control by any means, but they weren't playing well. So Clarkson has made these moves, and really, he probably got into them a little bit at halftime, I would have thought, because they weren't very physical, and it wasn't a physical game. I went from one game to the other, and I found the Western Bulldogs game versus St Kilda a far more intense, competitive match, which obviously was on the scoreboard.
This was played at arm's length, given the...
And it just looked like once Hawthorn controlled it, they controlled it. Essendon didn't give up. They made some moves. They tried to be creative with their forward line. They realised that their forward line's the problem. They had the normal issues with some of their goal kicking, but Carlisle fought it out well, got three, should have kicked four. There's no doubt about that. Their back line did all right. Big Ruffy, you know, was influential, but it was up the ground, midfield, centre-half forward. Yeah, which is a great sign for them to be able to do that. They were tested and they were able to get out of it, and they were able to practice the things when they are under pressure, when their scores aren't close. What will we do in this situation? Because remember, they didn't have a Rioli to try and ignite them and get them going. Took the opportunity to put Mitchell off half-back. So they did some, but yeah.
It was that sort of game, yeah.
It was that sort of game, Mark.
You know, we celebrate great football stories, the emergence of Nat Fyfe as a true champion of the game, a future, seemingly very near future, Brownlow medalist. But it is really sad to see Adam Cooney, who was a champion and a Brownlow medalist, physically disintegrate every time he plays football. He had the week off, and he looked bloody good with that week off in the first quarter and first half.
His first half was very good. He was
sharp.
That's
because that's what his body lets him do. A week off and for a half, he looked really good. And that bloody knee of his, that degenerative knee situation and what it's done to his body means that even in a game, his physical disintegration in an afternoon is so sad to watch for a true champion, which is what Adam Cooney fully fit was.
Well, he had 13 in the first half.
We're first at the footy every Sunday morning on 11:16 SEN. Inside Football. Full-on footy analysis with Robert Shaw and Mark Fine. For McDonald Merhome, the employment lawyers, 9650-4555. And Epworth. Better. Inside Football. The Sydney Swans. Richmond.
No one long for him to pass to. Good movement from Delidier. Got through to Marriage somehow. Swings it back to goal. Guess who's there? Reed. Can't mark. Cochin wins it, but he's tackled immediately. He's kicked an unbelievable goal. He's kicked it out of his, you know what?
He's backside. No question about it.
Extraordinary goal from Trent Cochin.
The questions about Trent Cochin earlier on in the season when Richmond weren't finding their best selves, but Richmond's win over the Sydney Swans, trailing by 32 points at half time. A score of 8-7 to 3-5 is a 32-point scoreboard deficit, but when you are playing the Swans, when you've only kicked three goals, when they are in boa constrictor type strangle mode, it was a lot further back than 32 points in many people's minds, except those Richmond players out there. And Shorey, they finally, of course, got over the top, 14-11 to 11-11, 95-77. The goal sealed by the president of the St Albans Soccer Club, Ivan Maric, with a place kick, a penalty spot kick in the final quarter to put them 12 points ahead. And that penalty was courtesy of some very good play by Jack Riewoldt. The ball was left on the spot and then he very coolly came in and side-footed it past the goalkeeper. That was, you know.
With the inside of the foot. It was a perfectly placed penalty.
He just slotted it away.
Teddy Richards went the wrong way.
There were two goalkeepers, so it was particularly good.
Mark, this was a 50-point turnaround, and what we saw is the absolute the best of the Tigers that quickly followed on their worst. They were still turning the ball over in the first half. Their handball was indecisive, and Sydney were just irrepressible. They were quick. They were magnificent through stoppages. Hanbury had 20 at halftime. Young Lloyd played a terrific game. He had 11 in the second quarter. Kennedy had 15 to half time.
What do you make of young of Mitchell? Now, he kicked an important goal.
That was his quietest day for some time.
I find his possessions not so telling, but he certainly has a role to play, but is it with another club? I just think he'd be really valuable somewhere else.
He's been going high 20s, Mark. He's had 3-7 on the weekend. He just had a bad day.
But his numbers, when they're high, are not... They're not that... To me, they're not that telling at Sydney because they've got inside... They've got their midfield.
Right. Well, the starting midfield is basically Hanbury, Kennedy, Jack Parker. You throw McVeigh in there. Who else does a little bit through there? Cunningham will do a run with job. Goods will pinch hit. Jetta's on a wing. He's probably the fourth or fifth of a very deep midfield.
And they've got Isaac Heaney in development.
He'll come in.
So
we know that.
They have fattened young Mitchell up. He's got great value on the trade market. Now, I'm being callous here, but I'm being realistic as well. Sydney are going to be looking at some time for a key backman, as Grundy and Richards have held that those positions... Man and boy for a decade.
Yeah, I know.
He's got trade value. I think he should be put on. I think he's not because he's no good, but because
he'd be
a standout somewhere else, and they'd love him. I think they need to bolster their back line, and they've got somebody they could bolster it with. Just an observation.
All right, now Tigers. Where did this come from? In the second quarter, Richmond had 76 possessions to 116, and in the blink of a 20-minute half-time break, they turned that around, 113 possessions in the third quarter to the Swans, a miserable 62. And full credit must go to a lower-profile player. I thought Miles was outstanding. Cochin played his best captaincy game that I've seen him play. And, of course, Martin got on top of Parker. That was a great duel. He was fantastic. Delidio came to the party. Ellis came to the party.
They were all good, but Riewoldt was great.
Well, they've taken 17 marks between them. Vickery, where was he 6 weeks
ago? Good second half, Vickery.
Strong, courageous, everything Richmond people want. Griffiths didn't have...
Presence. Well, Vickery's got presence.
It was the first time I've seen Grundy and Richards absolutely comprehensively beaten. One by Riewoldt, and the work rate. Like, you put a name, put this alongside Ty Vickery's name, and the Tigers supporters will go, what's he talking about? Work rate. Fantastic.
Trickery by Vickery. Mark, he barely had it in the second.
Yeah, 1-2. Yeah.
It's sad. It's sad, because he was a champion, and even can be again if you give him a week off. But in four quarters, it's not working.